Forward by Mycroft Holmes. The following letter and documents are reproduced in accordance with written instructions provided to me from Sherlock Sherringford Holmes, my late brother. His autobiographical account, written by his own hand, was entrusted to me with the instructions that I should make such arrangements as may be necessary for its publication 75 years after his passing. Those arrangements are herein fulfilled in the present year, inasmuch as it corresponds with his request. These documents will serve as an immortal tribute to the legacy of the man with whom I have been honoured above all others to have shared a small part of my own existence. It is my fervent desire that posterity will heed the hard-won life lessons learned by a man who I esteem to have been the preeminent problem-solver. The habits and peculiarities of his personal life were as individually unique as any other human being. His singular ability to make things right, which others about him had caused to be terribly wrong, was driven by a compassionate understanding that we are, individually and collectively, responsible for the state of our own existence. It is his ability to rationally discern that state of existence and take effective action upon it for the greater benefit of life that defines the extraordinary character of Sherlock Holmes. I speak of him in the present as he remains an indestructible drop sparkling in the sea of spirit which creates and animates all things. I trust that my efforts to fulfill his final instructions will, through his reflections upon the nature of humanity, as revealed in the following pages, enhance our ability to wear our self-anointed crown as caretakers of every species of life and the planet upon which we exist. In that capacity, and as a fellow citizen of Earth, I remain yours faithfully. Mycroft Spencer Holmes.
An open letter from Sherlock Holmes. To readers of the accounts of my investigatory cases. I address this letter of introduction to the following monograph, written by my own hand. I have undertaken to commit this autobiographical revelation of the factual events of my life to writing, at the suggestion and encouragement of my best friend in the world, my brother, Mycroft Holmes. An interlude of some years following my death will transpire prior to the publication of this material. My intention is to provide sufficient time for any persons who may have known me personally during my own lifetime to have expired. Moreover, this interval shall allow the innocent relatives of offending parties named herein a buffer of time in which to be spared from the ignominy that their circumstantial relationship by birth may incur upon them. Having no children of my own, and no other living relation other than Mycroft, I bequeath this true and factual accounting of my life to date to the discretionary disposal of my brother, or any other persons he shall seem fit to receive or purvey it. The reason that this autobiographical account of my life has been withheld from public knowledge heretofore are several. First, that the events described herein are of a nature which, if made known during the lifetime of the persons implicated, will precipitate a considerable scandal upon several Scottish writers and their publishers, the British scientific community, and several highly placed government officials, and the throne of England. Second, I have always been a singularly private individual. I do not wish to draw undue attention to either my person or my deeds during my own lifetime through the publication of this monograph. The information revealed herein will, without any doubt, excite extraordinary controversy and notoriety. Finally, the crimes and conspiracies described herein have been duly resolved to the satisfaction of all parties who may have been offended or harmed by their perpetration. Further, The offending parties, who until the publication of these documents will have lived out their natural lives in quiet desperation, while maintaining the modest notoriety to which they aspire, have been coerced to make amends for their misdeeds to my complete satisfaction, as well as compensatory penalties agreed upon by the stipendiary magistrate. However, the eternal reward of their duplicitous, dishonourable, and egregious acts shall be that their names will live in infamy throughout the declining years of our own decadent civilization. Karma does not watch the hands of time in the microcosm of our existence. A deed done is done. Unless it has been amended in exact proportion to the harm caused, the existential ramifications upon the transgressor will continue to remain fully in force, according to the natural laws of the universe. As you may be aware, I retired from active practice as a detective and removed myself to a small farm on the Sussex Downs, in the vicinity of Hurstmonceux Castle, therefore pursuing the avocations of apiculture and floriculture. In order to preserve several of my successful observations, I have produced a small monograph entitled Practical Handbook of Bee Culture, which include my own observations upon the segregation of the queen. Since retiring from London to the wholesome and pristine environs of the South, I have consulted in only one detective investigation— The Adventure of the Lion's Mane, which I narrated myself, pursuing the case as an amateur. This self-narrative was produced for reasons that will become evident as you read the remainder of this autobiographical treatise. The events, places, and persons described in the following narrative appear at various times and places during my career as a detective. These are not necessarily ordered in the same progression as the events occurred in reality, but rather as they seem significant in retrospect. The written record of my adventures, as conveyed by Dr. John Hamish Watson, rather than myself, as you will read herein, are a fallacious perversion of the reality of my own identity and activities. You may recall that, at the end of the first published story of my detective adventures, A Study in Scarlet, Watson was so impressed by my elegant handling of the case, and so incensed by Scotland Yard's claiming full credit for its solution, that he exclaimed, "Your merits should be publicly recognized. You should publish an account of the case. If you won't, I will for you." Owing to my utter disinterest in self-proclamation, and my propensity toward the incessant pursuit of new mysteries to solve, my response to this proposal was, "You may do what you like, Doctor." Hence, Watson proceeded to write the story, which was represented as a reprint from the reminiscences of John H. Watson, or so I was led to believe. However, this delusion has now become the subject of this present diatribe, and the particular details of a much broader affair are contained in this monograph. None of the facts you will read herein have ever been surmised, supposed, and imagined with respect to any of my adventures. Indeed, the nature and identity of the dramatis personae on the stage of the intrigue I relate to you now have never before been revealed. The challenges of this case were the most difficult I have ever faced in my career. Indeed, the formidable combination of investigation skills, information gathering, and persistence required the considerable energies of both myself and my dear brother Mycroft, together with a legion of agents from the office of the Chancellor of the Exchequer, as well as the Secret Information Services, SIS, whose resources were engaged upon the matter for several years. The unprecedented access to the public and secret archives of the British government, at the singular disposal of Mycroft Holmes, where he served in a quiet yet colossal position of importance during his long career, proved an efficacious flail with which to thresh grains of truth from the chaff of chicanery. The nature of this task demanded that we excavate the ethereal borders between reality and fantasy to reveal the foundations of our very existence, the creative spirit versus the product of creation, reality. Indeed, our investigation demanded that we trespass upon the very origin point of creation itself. Our struggle confronted the quintessential villain, which is metaphorically referred to as the nemesis of the human spirit, more reality. This is the brutal force over which creative imagination must ultimately triumph, just as I am alleged to have defeated the criminal mastermind, Professor Moriarty. There are no enemies so deadly as those upon which we are most dependent for our survival. Life is infinitely stranger than anything which the mind of man could invent. We would not dare to conceive the things which are really mere commonplaces of existence. If we could fly out of a window hand in hand, hover over the great city of London, gently remove the roofs and peep in at the queer things which are going on, the strange coincidences, the plannings, the cross purposes, the wonderful chains of events working through generations and leading to the most outre results, it would make all fiction with its conventionalities and foreseen conclusions most stale and unprofitable. Many hard-won lessons have been gained, retrospectively, during the intervening years. I have subsequently gained, with the able assistance of Mycroft, what I am certain to be an indisputable resolution of the matter. In so doing, as we were faced with no other option than to begin our excavation and exhumation of evidence in a heretofore hidden hinterland, metaphorically speaking, we follow the fantastical footsteps of a white rabbit into the treacherous illusions of a real-life wonderland. I invite you to join this escapade, if you will indulge me, into my ultimate adventure. Moreover, I trust that posterity will inherit some small benefit from these observations made upon the volatile process, distillation, and residue of my life. Sherlock Holmes, Sussex Downs, England.